Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. We are brought to you live here from this station. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. Don't forget to dial the 760 in the front. And also on our podcasts at kxoradio.com.
And you can like the 88.7 KUBO Facebook page, or you could like the REM page, probably. It's a little late. They're not going to be watching it anymore. That was part of the contractual agreement of the breakup.
But thank you, Mayu, for putting on that song. Thank you.
Absolutely. This is Let's Talk About It, your voice for wellness here in the Imperial Valley. And let's go. Ready? Ready, steady, go. All right. We're here with
me. Ready or not, here we go.
we're here today. You know, once in a while, we get to do really cool shows. And the cool shows are the people who have are willing to come on the radio, first of all. That, like, takes a little, you know, courage. And tell their stories. And because real people's stories have this thing about them that make them really, you know, compelling. And I think it really helps the rest of the community get a sense of what people sometimes have to go through in order to be who they are, and how much strength that takes, how much courage that takes, and how cool those people are. So if you were nervous a minute ago, now you're like five times as nervous. But we love you. Hey, good morning. Welcome. We have a guest today. Her name's Misty. Misty, how are you?
I'm good.
You are good?
Yeah.
Yeah? Is your mom listening?
No, my mom's not listening.
Did you tell her about it?
Yeah, I told a couple people, but I didn't know what station I was talking about.
Well, you know what? We'll let them know that it'll be on the podcast. So it's there forever now on the internet.
Okay.
So, Misty. Okay, let's start with today. What are you up to today? What's going on in your life? Who are you?
Who am I? I'm a recovering addict. I'm a full-time student. I'm a mother of three, but I take care of two.
And you're like what? Like 20-something, huh?
28.
28? 28. Whoa. Very cool. So 28, recovering addict, yeah. Full-time mom?
Full-time mom.
Full-time student?
Full-time student.
Wait. That's two full-times already.
Yeah. It feels...
Do anything else, or is that pretty much it?
That's it.
Yeah? It keeps you busy?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right. How'd you get there?
Through behavioral health. I have my case manager, Nikki, and my therapist, and a lot of people through behavioral health that help me with the services and help me get my books for school and just stood by me and motivated me.
So it's our fault.
It is.
You wouldn't be this busy right now. You wouldn't have all this stuff to do if it weren't for us.
Yep.
Ooh. What was Nikki thinking, huh?
She had to be a strong person to deal with me, because a lot of patience.
So let's, like Scott said, you know, start from the start, you know, from the beginning. Why is it that you came into behavioral health?
I came into behavioral health because I had lost my son when he was 3.5 years old to CPS, and I was addicted to drugs, like really bad, to methamphetamine, and I was just on a road to nowhere, and I started going. I went to VOA to try to recover, and that didn't work. So
in VOA was a residential. We used to have a residential alcohol and drug treatment.
Yeah, Volunteers of America.
Volunteers of America.
Yeah, and my life was just going downhill from when they took my son from me, and I just had no hope for like 2-3 years. And finally I decided, like, you know, to go to behavioral health and try to get more services, and I did, and I got a caseworker. It was Mary Sines first, and she dealt with me for like 6 months to a year, and I wasn't really serious about my recovery. I did perinatal for like 2 years, and I don't know, it just took me a while to really get tired of that same life, and just one thing after another started happening in my life when I decided to get sober, like the possibilities that I never thought would happen. It just started happening, and I got my life. I got sober, first of all, and then I got enrolled with IVC, and then I just started going to school, and then I finished my therapy. I finished my groups, and now I'm off probation. So now I'm just, like, living a free life, a sober free life.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels good. It feels rewarding.
337-8874 is the phone number. We're here today with Misty Britton. She's telling her story. Did you just wake up and end up in this life, or did it come, you know, did it somehow come out of your childhood or what?
Oh,
you had a pretty tough time growing up, didn't you?
Yeah. I've been in the system since I was 11 years old.
Well, one of the things that a lot of people say, you know, the CPS took their children, you know, because they're drug, you know, they don't know the whole story. A lot of people just pass judgment.
Just
pass judgment, you know, that, you know, it's a good, they're not a good parent, you know, they care more for their drugs and their kids, but they don't know the whole story. They don't know, you know, they just see what's in front of them, but not, you know, not who they are and where they came from.
Well, I came from a life of a lot of abuse, a lot of drug abuse. My mother used, my father used, my stepfather used. It was just like a cycle I was in. And
here in the Valley?
Here in the Valley, yeah.
Oh, there's problems here in the Valley?
There's a lot of problems.
There's a lot of drug problems in the Valley?
It's even worse when you got a family member that uses with you, and you know what I mean? You depend on that person depends on you. So when you do decide to get sober and you saw that person in your life, it's a challenge to want to stay sober because, you know what I mean, you're just...
It's hard.
Did you see your mom going through that as a kid or no?
Yeah, I used drugs with my mother.
But did she also have the same problem with her partners, with the guys in her
life? My father was very abusive. My stepfather was a heroin addict, and he was abusive towards us. My mom was really, like, she's really naive, I guess. She really didn't know too much about drugs, and then she got introduced to drugs, and then...
Who introduced them? Your dad, or...?
My stepdad.
Your stepdad?
My stepdad did. And, I don't know, and then I got introduced to it at a really young age. I started using methamphetamine when I was 13 and a half years old. And
wait, you said that you were taken away into the system at 11.
Yeah.
Doesn't that mean you were safe and protected? And
no, I ran away from the group homes a lot. I was always on the run. I was
at 13.
13.
What did you do? I mean, it's just even as adults, you know, when we go somewhere new, I'm like, oh, okay, what's going on? Weren't you scared? Or
yeah, I'm 48 and I haven't run away yet, okay?
No.
I was scared, but, I mean, the adrenaline rush, I mean, when you feel like, you know, you got...
Why did you want to... Well, first of all, why did you run away?
There was no real reason of running away. Just, I mean, I had to be in a certain place and I didn't want to be there. You know, I was... What's called rebellious.
Mm-hmm. And that group home was here locally? Or?
Yeah, it was here. It was the Pepper home and it was the Birch home.
Mm-hmm.
And Elson Jordan and Calexico. I mean, there was nothing bad about the group homes. It's just not wanting to listen. I mean, I think that's with every 12, 13-year-old, you know. I mean, my mom, I got to do whatever I wanted when I was in the group homes. I had chores. I had a routine, you know, and not wanting to do that, I just use that as an excuse to leave, you know, but there was no really... I put myself through more problems by leaving because when I was on the streets, you know, a lot of things happened to me, and I didn't realize until after I was in those situations that I should have stayed where I was at, you know. And I don't know. I don't blame the system for too much, but I mean, they helped me, and I only did a lot of things to myself.
What could they have done better? How about that? Because, you
know,
any time... You come out of something, whether it's school or a relationship or even a TV show, when you watch a TV show, you come out and say, you know, they could have done this. Or they could have done. What could the system have done for you in looking back on it now and saying, yeah, it would have been nice if...
I think that, I mean, what they could have done for me is, I mean, I wasn't a bad child, you know. I was just, I didn't go to school, you know. Like, I just ditched school a lot. I mean, I don't feel that that's too bad, but I mean... when they put me in the Los Niños, I don't think they should have put me in a straight girls group home. I think they could have gave me a chance to put me in like a foster home, like a lower level. because they took me from being a little girl, you know, and put me in these strict level six group homes.
So you weren't really sophisticated mm-hmm. when you were like pulled off the street at 11. I mean, you know, you weren't.
I was.
You weren't like a super tough kid though.
I mean, I was, but I mean, I think I should have been able to have a chance in a foster home, like
with a foster parent. Or
yeah, I was in there with older girls from group homes that had a lot of problems and they had a lot of influence on me when I went to these group homes. You know, they taught me things I didn't even know. You know what I mean? And it was tough being in the group homes. I got in a lot of fights. I mean, we were girls that came from all different sorts of families, and you know.
And you had to kind of like defend yourself.
Yeah,
kind of.
I did. And I was separated.
Since you were younger than the other girls.
Yeah, and you know, my sisters. I was placed with my sisters, just one of my sisters, and I mean, I don't think that was a good thing because me and my sister, we fed off each other. You know, like. You know, she didn't want to do something, and I wasn't doing it either. Like, you know, I just think that we should have been more, not together, because it wasn't helping us being together.
And but usually, you know, the system wants to keep at least the siblings together.
Yeah,
you know?
They do, but I mean, in my case, I don't think it was good, because me and my sister were bad with each other, you know, mm-hmm. like, we plotted with each other, like, you know what I mean? So I wasn't really trying to help myself when I was with my sister. I was just trying to get in more trouble. And I think it was easier for me to get in trouble when I had my sister right there with me, my older sister. Mm-hmm.
So you were taken away at age 11 because of your mom's drug use?
Yeah, my sister had gotten in a fight here in El Centro, and my mom wasn't there. And I had to be taken to the hospital where I had glass in my eyes because my sister got in a fight. And I remember...
Sounds like a real fight.
No, my sister put some girl's head through the window.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an older girl, you know, so it was like all my life.
At school or what?
Just at the motel.
Okay.
And my mom wasn't there. And
and that's where you guys were living?
Yeah.
At the motel.
At the motel. Okay. In a dysfunctional family. You know, my mom was using and her boyfriend was using. Mm-hmm. And everything happened for a reason, you know. Now that I look back on it, everything in my life has happened to me for a reason, you know, right? Like sometimes I don't know why certain things happen, but later on in life I do find answers mm-hmm. to why things happen, you know, and... I mean, I don't know where I'd be right now, I mean, as a woman, as a mother, if it wasn't for a lot of services through CPS and behavioral health, and, you know, just, I mean, people put their lives up there to help people, and some people don't know how to appreciate it, and, you know, you got these tools in life, and, you know, it's on you whether or not you know how to use them or you want to use mm-hmm. them, you know, and there's a lot of resources, and once you learn how to use them, then, you know, life gets easier.
337-8874 is the phone number. Let's talk about it. It's the show. We're here with Misty. Misty, you're in the hospital. You're getting glass taken out of your eyes.
Yeah.
Which must have been kind of scary, too.
Yeah, I was scared because then CPS showed up. And then, you know...
Did you know when CPS walked in the door that what was going down? Or
yeah, because I heard them telling my mom. And my mom started crying. And my mom was like, why? And, you know, and I was just laying there on this table. And I was just like... okay, what's going to happen now? And they took me and my four sisters, but they left my little brother and my little sister and my mom, and I didn't understand that. And so the lady was telling us, well, we're going to go to Los Niños. And I was like, well, where's Los Niños? And my mom was like, just go and behave. And, you know, and I was like, I didn't understand why, you know, where this place was. I've heard of it. I had heard of it. But I never thought I'd see myself there, you know. And then
were you thinking that it was like your fault or your mom's fault or the system's fault? Did you at
that
time, point?
At 11 years old,
yeah.
I was more pissed off at my mom, I guess you could say, because
yeah.
you know the lady had broke it down to us, like real simple. Like she didn't leave nothing out, you know. I mean, we were 11 and 12, and we knew, you know, what was
you
going
knew
on.
What was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I knew my mom was in trouble. I knew that they had asked my mom to drug test, and she refused. So right then and there, like at 11 years old, I knew that that was a big reason why.
You knew your mom was using at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You knew about drugs at 11?
Yeah, I knew a lot about drugs. I started smoking pot when I was 9. So, I mean, I was around a lot.
And
of
you knew it was like one of those get-you-in-trouble kind of things?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But, I mean, I knew at 11 what was going on, and I was more hurt with my mom because, you know, like... I felt it was her fault, and she kept telling us, well, if you guys weren't doing this or you weren't doing that, you know, the cops would have never came. And I was like, well, even though if the cops came, you know, you weren't here, you know, you'd been gone all day. And So we would just be, we took care of ourselves.
So who took care of the little, your little brothers and sister?
Me and my older sister. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Mom has 8 kids. So, you know, we grew up real fast raising each other. And, you know, like today, my mom, she'll tell me, well, I don't know what it was, Misty. Like, she didn't have enough attention for all of us.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her for that, you know.
Who, 8 kids?
8. I don't know.
That's a lot.
I have 2 right now, and I'm just like, oh, it's hard. It's hard dividing your attention with one to the other.
And then you're 28, and so you've got like 6 to go.
You're a full-time mom and a full-time student, so.
Yeah.
Bigger moving.
You know.
I don't want more kids, Scott.
Not 8?
No, hell no. No. I would really be lifting Beaver out, though.
So did you just kind of go, did you try and do what your mom said? Did you try and go to McNeese and behave? Or was that too hard? Or did it, you know?
No, we were really bad when we got there. And they used to tell my mom to come in and try to calm us down. And, you know, we were just, I don't know.
You were mad because, you
know,
first
we were used to being free and doing what we want, you know. Like, we were young adults. At 11, I was a young adult, you know. I took care of everything in the house for my mom and my sister did. You know, my mom, she always had us doing, you know, her responsibilities. So it was kind of hard when they try to put you down in Los Niños and make you.
You were more of a parent.
Okay,
in other words,
okay, sweetheart, it's time to go lay down and go to bed. Why don't you go to your room now? And you're like,
yeah, you know,
sup?
I was like, the hell, you know, I mean, like, no, no. So I was like, I had to stop everything in my life to be a kid, and that wasn't possible because I had no childhood really growing up. I had more responsibilities than I did.
So you couldn't gear it down. You couldn't.
No.
Like, okay,
it was hard.
I'm gonna put on a little pink dress. Put a little bow in my hair.
Yeah,
take some
dolls. Yeah, I mean, my
you'd already been surviving.
Yeah, you know, and dolls was way past my time. I mean, I don't remember playing with dolls. I mean, that's.
In other words, it's kind of like you didn't really, like you said, you didn't have a childhood.
No.
You didn't have, like, you know, somebody, your mom taking care of you instead of you taking care of her and your other siblings.
Yeah, it was kind of hard. And then, you know, when you go to Los Niños, you can't tell your sisters or your brother, you know, what to do, or, you know, you can't really.
Oh, so they took away your job, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, they had my brother and my little sisters crying in different rooms, like, you know, because you can't go in there with them. You have to be like.
The age separation.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, you know, they had my brother or my sister in the nursery, and, you know, I was like, oh, I didn't understand it. And they just, like, totally separated us. They wanted us to be together during the day, but at night we couldn't be.
So you're like the defender, huh?
Yeah, I felt.
You're like the warrior.
Well, yeah, I felt I had to be because they were confused, you know, they were young, and I knew what was going on. I just didn't want to tell them the real deal about, you know, why we were where we were.
Yeah, like they wouldn't even get it.
No, they wouldn't understand, you know.
All they knew is that mom wasn't there and you weren't there. You know, they were by themselves.
Yeah. And we all got placed in group homes. And it was quick. It was real quick. And I was in there for a long, long time.
Even the babies went home to mom, huh?
The babies went home to my mom. But they were there for, like, I think a couple days, maybe. Not even a couple days. And then they got to go home. And that really confused me because I didn't understand why.
Because they were the most vulnerable. You were the ones taking care of them when they were in the home. Now they're going back to mom.
Yeah, I didn't understand why my mom was getting them back and I wasn't going back to my mom.
Yeah, well, especially since it was your
job
to take care
of them. Do you know why? Looking back, why was the reason?
I don't know why. I have no idea why. And it didn't make sense to me. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know why my mom got any of them back right away. You know,
did they stay with mom or
they
or
stayed with my mom for a little while, and then, you know, we were always in and out of group
homes.
Out,
yeah.
But my mom lost him again. Mm-hmm. Eventually she lost him again, you know, because she wasn't showing up to my court, and when she did, they drug test her on the spot, and she, you know,
and she passed or failed depending on your point of view.
She failed.
Yeah.
She failed,
and so but they took him away.
But, I mean, it took them a while to do that, you know, but I don't know. I guess my mom needed an eye-opener. But, I mean, my mom's only been in recovery for a little while, too.
How's that working for her?
I'm like her backbone right now.
again or still?
I'm still her backbone. You know, we all need somebody to lean on, somebody that has more strength than each other. You know, I'm my mom's strength right now, and my mom's mine. My mom helps me a lot. She helps me a lot.
All right, I'll bite. Who's yours? Who's your backbone? Who do you lean on?
I lean on my resources and my my coping skills, my grounding tools.
Oh, all that stuff that you've learned.
Yeah.
All your tools.
Yeah.
You have a bag of tools, and those are the ones that you take out whenever you need them.
Yeah, I use a lot of my tools. I like to call people when I feel down. I like to call Behavioral Health and bug them.
Call your mental health rehab tech.
All of them. But it's nice having them there because, you know, they're always going to be there. You know what I mean? And when I finished my program, I was scared because I was used to being there every week and, you know.
The alcohol and drug treatment?
The alcohol and drug. And when I graduated, I was like.
What else?
What am I going to do now, you know? Like
jumping out of the plane without a parachute.
I don't know, but. It's good to be able to call them and know that they're going to...
And you knew that was a tough time for people, huh? Because you'd seen people take that step and
I've seen a lot of people graduate and come right back.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time, 2.5 years to graduate, because I just couldn't fake it to make it. I just had it had to be real. I mean, I could have graduated many times, but I just... It didn't feel right because...
You were never very good at faking it, were you?
No.
Ever.
You tell it as it is.
Yeah. I mean, I just couldn't fake it. And when I finally graduated, it was so rewarding. It was like a dream. Because I never thought I'd see the day that I would graduate, you know. I was proud of myself.
So you did like the full hard-on sobriety thing?
Yeah.
Like... Nothing never?
Nothing ever.
I was going to take you out to coffee. I guess not, huh?
No, I don't drink coffee, Scott. Sorry. That's another addiction.
Good for you. I don't drink coffee either.
It's very addictive. My mom's addicted to coffee.
It is relatively
my mom's
addicting.
It's crazy without coffee. I've never known anybody like to get crazy without coffee.
Caffeine.
Yeah.
And coffee's a pretty good source of it.
Oh, man.
So and, it is. Coffee.
And my sister, she's addicted to soda. My mom's addicted to coffee. And my brother's addicted to cigarettes. Those are the three addictions in my house right now, but nothing I'll pick up. You know, it's all.
Nothing that ICE is interested in, huh?
Nothing. I'm not. I won't get hit by ICE, too.
There you go. This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. We're right up on top of the hour. So let's take a short break and give you a chance to check your messages at work or whatever. It's almost 8 o'clock, and we'll be right back with more of Misty.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And if you missed the first half, you can always access it on our podcast at kxoradio.com. And Mario just played another song of R.E.M. Tribute. We're doing a tribute today to R.E.M.
Yeah, tip of the hat to executive producer Mario Espinosa, awesome. Who knows when the R.E.M. songs are going to end, like psychically. So none of this kind of lingering before the show starts thing. It was like, you guys are on. And we're back. And we're back with Misty. Good morning, Misty.
Good morning, Scott.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How's the first half of the show for you?
Good, good.
Yeah? Yeah?
A little nervous, but I mean, I love to talk.
You're down now, huh?
Yeah.
Ready to go.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. 337-8874. Call Misty. Give her, like, a shout-out or something if you want.
Kudos.
Somebody call me.
You know, the problem with our people is nobody's up at 8.
I know.
Or they're up, but they're out watering their lawn and dealing with all their chores before
or
it gets too hot.
Or dropping off kids at school. Yeah, I mean, they need to be at school, actually, at 8. So.
Yeah, right now.
So everybody's driving back. And they can't be calling and driving at the same time.
Yes, no texting and driving.
But you can like us on Facebook now, 88.7, and you could throw up a comment about today's show. I'm sure we'd be good for that.
Yeah, somebody call.
Dial up.
It'll help my self-esteem.
Yeah, your self-esteem needs lots of help, Maria. I noticed that. Just dragging us down here. We talked, you know, our guest today is Misty, and she was mentioning in the first half of the show that she was began kind of, you know, she grew up in a really tough place. Her mom was struggling with abusive partners and drugs, and she was taken into the system at 11 years old. And
ended up at Betty Jo McNeese, Los Niños.
And we kind of think, I think maybe an assumption maybe, that once you're into the system that there's relative safety and relative protection and relative progress, and some sort of weird happily ever after awaits at the end. But the system's pretty tough.
Yeah, the system's very tough.
And so they put you in group homes, like, here locally first, right?
Locally, and then they sent me out.
But group homes don't have big fences on them with, like...
No.
So how did you handle the group home thing?
They're all right. I got in trouble for stealing the probation van from Riverside County.
So you were sent to probation?
I was sent to Riverside County to a group home. And I stole their van, and I brought it down here when I was 13. I drove it down here.
You drove when you were 13 all the way?
Yeah, I drove from.
Yeah, and you knew how to drive.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like you
I
learned.
I used to steal my mom's car when I was 11, so I mean.
She'd send you to the store. Here's the keys.
She'd go to sleep and we.
Joyride.
All night long. Yeah, but yeah, I stole a probation van from Riverside County. I think I was the only first one and only one, and I brought it down here. I was here for 2 weeks with the van. I had the van, and they got me.
Good thing it had a full tank of gas, huh?
It
got you down here.
It was a nice van, brand new van. No.
So what happened? They got you and...
They got me and they put me in juvenile hall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I was a big girl now. I was like, no more Los Niños. So I committed a crime and...
Well, how old were you?
13.
13. Wow. And I mean, for us, you know, 13, it's just that's a teenager. That's when you become a teenager and... You know,
I was still playing G.I. Joes.
Yeah, my niece, just.
Or
so what happened after they put you in juvenile hall?
And then they found out that there one more person that wanted me. I think it was San Jose. They sent me to another highest level of a group home, and I went up there. I was there for like 2 months, 3 months, maybe. And I had altercations with gang members,
mm-hmm.
and I guess...
What, that sounds pretty official, but what's it look like? I mean, what actually happens in an altercation?
Well, I've gotten a lot of physical fights with a lot of girls over there. I'm from Southern California. I went up to Northern California, and it was like...
They didn't welcome you?
No, it was not. It wasn't... They had a lot of, like gangbangers, it was a lot of gangs.
So it didn't matter if you were one of those or not.
It just came, that I came from.
Were you a gang? Were you in a gang?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gang marks on my hands, so that already made me, you know, affiliated me. But I had gotten stabbed in my sleep up there in San Jose.
In a group home?
In a group home.
They could have killed you.
Yeah, they almost, she did. She stabbed me in my arm and my back. And Imperial County, they just kind of like hit it in a way. The first thing I ran away. As soon as they stabbed me, I came home on a home visit.
You weren't safe.
Yeah, I ran. I came home on a home visit, and my mom, she knew I was going to run already because they hadn't even told my mom that I had been stabbed. So I came down here and broke the news to her, and then I went back up to San Jose, and I took off to Stockton. I ran away to Stockton.
You were still 13 then?
13.
Wow.
I was on the run over there. I was raped, I was beat while I was on the run. I remember being caught over there, and I think it was in Stockton, and Tri-County transported me from Stockton back down to Imperial Valley after being in juvenile hall, and I got put back in juvenile hall, and then they put me back in the system again, and the only place they could place me was out of state now.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me in St. George, Utah from the time I was 14 till I was 16. I was in boot camp for 2 years in St. George, Utah.
You couldn't run away from there?
No. I was on a high-risk runaway, so they put me on belt status for like 6 months. They walked me around by holding me by the back of my belt everywhere I walked.
It's very dignified, huh? Empowering.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So I felt like a dog on a leash.
Now, when you were out on the streets and stuff, you were using?
Yeah, I was.
Just to try and cope with the pain? Or?
I was just using, yeah, to cope with the pain and to get past the reality that sooner or later they're going to catch me and here I go again.
When you were, I mean, back then you were 14, you know, running away, 13, 14, 15. Did you ever say, you know what, I need to change, or what was it that, or no, were you angry? Were you angry? Did you want any help, or
back then,
what is it that you wanted back then? I mean,
I didn't want nothing back then. I wanted to just do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was pretty much set in my mind that I'm not going back to my mom. This is mm-hmm. what it is. You know, my mom can't help me. She could barely help herself. I felt alone. I felt, you
didn't
I mean?
Feel like the system could help you very much either.
No, I just felt like every time I thought I was getting better, that, you know what I mean, they found some reason to mess with me, like in the group home. Like, you know, like, I don't know, some of the group home parents were just probably better off, I mean, worse than the kids that were in there. You know, there was a lot of funny things going on in the group homes, you know what I mean? Like, the group home fathers were, like, trying to touch the girls. I mean, there was a lot of things that, you know, I didn't feel comfortable. I knew that it wasn't right, and I wasn't going to put myself in that situation, in that position to get raped or molested by, you know, the group home parents. And, you know, and I couldn't really voice my opinion to my social worker because I was out of county, and if you even got the message to them, you'd be lucky, you know what I mean? Like, you had no phone access. I mean, there was no way of really coming and telling the county that this and this is going on.
Well, and when you're an acting out teen, are people buying your story?
No, exactly. Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. They think that that's the reason why, you know. So, I mean, even if I did tell them, I wasn't going to get believed. You know, nobody was going to believe me. And, you know, so it was, like, pointless. So I just ran. I wanted to come home to my mom, and I just, you know, every time I ran, I came
did
straight
you
to my mom.
And you wanted to, because you wanted to be there and help her.
I wanted to be
make
with my
sure
mom.
Make sure the kids were safe, make sure she
yeah,
was
I
safe.
Yeah, I just wanted to be with my mom. I wanted to be home. I was tired of running. I was tired of, you know, being in trouble.
But you knew you couldn't go back.
I knew I couldn't go back. So I just
well, fortunately, you had those 2 years in Utah, and that
that
pretty much
you? Did that change you completely?
No, I got out.
No drugs, though, right? I mean, no drugs in Utah?
No, no drugs at all in Utah.
Yeah. It's a drug-free state.
Yeah, and when you're stuck on lockdown, you can't do nothing.
People carrying you by the belt.
You couldn't run from this place.
Yeah, no, it's in the middle of nowhere.
It was a lockdown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. Utah was pretty bad. They got me, and they roughed me up in Utah. They twisted my knee and my ankle. Because, I mean, they put us in an uncooperative room. Like
they, the grown-ups, or what?
The staff.
Yeah.
They were big old Samoans. And I remember when I acted out, like, I tried to attack a girl when I first got there. She was a girl I had fought with in Juneau Hall. She was placed up in Utah. When I had gotten there, I tried to attack them. Well, they attacked me. They flipped me on my face and
hi, welcome
me.
To Utah.
I was like, oh, my God. So
you want to try that again? Let's see.
Yeah. So, you know, like, it was the second day I had gotten there.
And it made you all better. Because when you left Utah, you were like an honor student. You never used drugs again. And
what happened? No, you weren't? What happened after you left Utah?
After I left Utah, I was 16 years old. I came back to my mom.
Officially reformed?
I was all right.
Did you get some stamp of approval?
Yeah, but I got kicked right back out of California as soon as I came back. I went back to my mom's. I had relapse. I got out October 22nd, 1999.
It's interesting that you're 16 and it's already a relapse, huh?
I think it was 1999 I had gotten out. And I had got another violation by January.
For
under the influence of methamphetamine. I got 3 violations back to back.
Was your mom still living in hotels or?
No, she was living in Raleigh. But you know, my mom was doing a lot better when I got out of Utah. It was just me. I was.
So that didn't change you in any way.
No.
Utah didn't change you.
No. I wasn't scared of nothing. I think it was more bold when I got out.
Because okay. If you survived Utah,
exactly.
Raleigh wasn't no challenge, huh?
No, not at all.
I lived through that. What else?
You know, and then I got violated, and my PO She locked me up for 90 days in juvenile hall. And then I got out. They got me for, I wanted to kill my stepdad. I hated him. I remember my PO, I don't know if I should say this on the radio. But, sorry.
Okay, everybody, listen.
Sorry, Pam.
Oh, she's retired.
I know, thank God. But she did something for me that nobody had ever done. She let me go to Oregon with my father. Mm-hmm. At 16. I hadn't met him in like 14 years. And but she kicked me out of California because I guess premeditated. I wanted to kill my stepdad.
Yeah.
And I just got in a lot of problems with my stepdad, and she let me go to Oregon with my dad when I was 16. She, like, before the judge could sign the papers, she put me on the Greyhound. So she did me that favor.
She was awesome.
Because my dad was...
I miss
my
Pam.
I love Pam Bonilla.
Yes. So. Yeah, she's great. That's right. She is great. Kudos to her. I mean...
I love Pam. She was my... She helped me. That's when I first started to get it right, like, when I was 17.
You've been in the system now for over 5 years.
She was the first one
that really stood out as, hey, this person's actually helping me?
Yeah.
And I believe that of it, because that's the way Pam was.
She was the only
Pam,
one.
And still is.
And Dinah Sacelo and Pam Bonillas, they were two amazing people, my probation officers.
But you didn't stay in Oregon. I know, because you're back.
No, I didn't.
We're not in Oregon. We're broadcasting from El Centro.
Yeah, I went up there for a year, and I got my GED.
Good.
Because they told me if as soon as I get my GED, I get off probation. That was a lie.
But it motivated you. It worked.
But what did you do in the meantime?
Were you using still or no?
In Oregon, yeah. I got. I went to Oregon, and I fell into like a really bad depression because the weather up there is like so bad. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's always gloomy. It's always raining. It's nothing like the valley.
That's why they're not really cool with people from California, too, because they're always in a bad mood because of the weather.
Yeah,
because
California people are all sunshine.
Yeah, you know. Well, I had gotten addicted to cocaine up there when I was 17. I got really bad on cocaine. I had overdosed on cocaine. I was dead.
You don't have any money? Cocaine's expensive.
I was introduced to really bad people. I was introduced to the drug lords up there in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Being that my dad was a biker and knew a lot of my dad, you know, my dad's old friends. And they wanted to meet me because they had never met me. And then, you know, my dad being home, you know, I just kind of stepped on his toes and talked to his friends and got introduced to the main people, the main supply of drugs. And it came real easy to me because I had it.
You'd been in that world before?
Yeah. And it makes it so much easier when it's there, you know, mm-hmm. than, you know, having to go out and look for it. So, I mean, I was really bad on cocaine when I was 17 years old. I remember I had overdosed, and I was dead for 4.5 minutes. My heart stopped twice before I hit the hospital. I had 17 paramedics assisting me because I guess my heart stopped at my sister's house. I don't know how it happened, but I remember waking up and my dad being really mad.
You think?
Yeah, my dad. The only thing you tell me is, what would I tell your mom? I was like, is that all you heard about? What would you tell my mom?
Yeah, but it was like really searching for a story there.
No, but I remember I was pretty bad. And
she thought it was table salt or something.
My mom, it was crazy because my mom was on the phone with her best friend that's from Oregon, and she told my mom, there's a lot of paramedics down the street. I don't know who's, you know, who they're seeing or whatever, and it had been me.
It was you.
Yeah, and I was dead.
But fortunately, so that scared you straight, right?
No.
Yeah, but that didn't. Didn't make it stop. You still continued.
I still continued using cocaine, and I was on cocaine up there in Oregon. I was on mushrooms, acid, ecstasy. I mean,
you're in the 60s crowd, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, there's a big variety of different drugs up there in Oregon. They don't have them really down here in the valley, like they had up there in Oregon. I did Black Beauties. I mean, I did stuff I never even heard of up there in Oregon. And it's like, I don't know, I was just a wild...
So you were only 17?
17.
A wild child.
Yeah,
you
very wild.
A wild child.
And at that point, nobody could tell me what to do at 17, mm-hmm. not even my father. You know, my dad was like, what are you? Who are you? You know, I guess I wasn't what he expected me to be.
So that's why you weren't, you were still on probation.
Yeah, from California. They told me that if I graduated, that I could get off. Well, come to find out that I stayed on another 2 years, something like that. Well, I came back down to California. I got kicked out of Oregon. The probation from my background, I had 2 felonies and a misdemeanor by the time I was 16. And they got my, from, I think, Salem, the capital, they got my record. And they
their eyes got really big.
And they didn't want me there.
Whoa.
They told Pam that I had to go back to California. So I got extradited to California through Pam, and then I got kicked out of Oregon and extradited right back to California. And by that time, I was 17 and a half or something like that. And I don't know.
To have some children, right?
No, I started slamming speed when I came back to California. I started
slamming as in injecting?
Injecting methamphetamine. Yeah. When I was 17, I was kidnapped. I was taken in Indiana by my ex-boyfriend for like 6 months. I was up there missing. I was a missing person.
And your boyfriend was from here?
Yeah. He was 31. I was 17. He was very, very abusive. Like, I don't know what I got myself into at 17. But yeah, I remember when I came back, I met him, and just through occasional using, and then he gave me some Oxycontin, I remember, and I popped some pills, and I don't remember the first 3 days that I was with him. Like, I woke up 3 days later, and I was smoking a lot of dope, and then he introduced me to slamming it, and I had previously used heroin, so I knew how.
Were you using drugs to just kind of escape, or just?
I was just using drugs because I was lost. I didn't know where to turn, who to turn to. My mom at that time was using again, so, and then I was
lots of pain, lots of stuff had racked up in your life.
And then my sisters were using, my little sisters were using meth, and I just didn't know.
What was that like to have your baby sisters using meth?
It was very disappointing because I felt like, I was a failure. And I guess, you get those feelings. You just want to keep using to numb yourself, Like, I just didn't see no point in my life. Like, my life was worthless because everybody in my family was just so messed up. And then my sister, I remember she got pregnant. I was so close to her. Both of my sisters had gotten pregnant. And I felt like I was alone. Like, they had their kids and it's like, I lost my sister Marilyn. She was so young. She was 15, and she got.
What happened?
She got pregnant. She didn't die. She just. I felt like I lost her as my friend, And she got pregnant. It was like she was pregnant, and she couldn't go out with me. She just, like everything changed. Like, it wasn't the same anymore. I felt a lot of hatred towards her boyfriend because, she was so young, and I felt like he took her away from me, and I was by myself, and so I found an older crowd to kick it with, and I used a lot of drugs, and I did a lot of transporting, and I did a lot of illegal things at a young age that I don't think any 17-year-old should have been going through or doing. Yeah.
Wow. That is a lot. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
337-8874. So let's talk about her here today with Misty. It's radio. You got to do that. It's part of the show. As a matter of fact, I don't do it enough, frankly. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot we're not supposed to talk about. I'm sorry, my bad.
That's good.
So how did it? Okay, so you're 17. You got this stuff going on, Indiana, lots of stuff. It just keeps adding up.
Yeah, just one thing after another. I mean, that's just the basic. I mean, all in between, there's
where,
just so
when,
much
how
you had kids.
Did it turn around?
No, I had been raped, and I had miscarriages. Mm-hmm. I had 3 miscarriages at 13 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
I was raped twice in Mexicali and B. And the person I've been raped by, I got pregnant. And I had a miscarriage. And then I got raped again. And I remember I had that baby kicked out of me in a fight. And it was pretty drama. Before I was 16, I had, 4 miscarriages. 3-4 miscarriages.
Mm-hmm. And then, when did
I think
what
I was
age
dealing a lot of my problems because being raped and taken advantage of. Like, I use a lot of drugs to numb myself, to tell myself that it's okay. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, just I didn't want to face reality.
Well, that's a lot of reality to have to sit with every day.
That's a lot of trauma. Mm. I mean, a lot of trauma. But when you had your babies, did you still use when you went? How old were you when you had your first baby?
I was 20 years old when I had my first baby. I used during my pregnancy, my first baby. Mm-hmm. I used until I was 6 months. I was in denial my whole pregnancy. Like, I couldn't believe I got pregnant. Like, you know, it was like a shock. I wasn't ready. I was scared.
And was that like from a relationship or was that also from?
No, that was from a relationship. But I mean, the person I was pregnant from was somebody I used with. So it wasn't really, you know, wasn't that type
like
of
time to start a family.
Yeah, and it was not even at all like that.
So you're kind of right now, it sounds like a story like your mom going through.
Yeah.
All over.
Like, did you ever get that feeling like, oh my goodness, here we go again?
Yeah. I still feel like I'm in that cycle. And I'm just holding on. I'm just like, it's like a, I don't know how you say, like, you know, have a canals and they have those things. They put them down in the canals to stop the water.
Yeah.
For the time being, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's how it feels right now. Like, all the pressure's on my back. And, you know.
A dam.
Like a dam.
Yeah.
There you go. That's how I feel. Like, I'm holding the dam, you know what I mean? I'm like...
Well, you're the one with the backbone.
Yeah. So it feels, you know...
In a way, lucky you, mm-hmm. because if you didn't have a backbone...
I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's how I feel right now with my family. Like, I'm the backbone, and, you know, I still got sisters that are using, you know what I mean? My mom's in recovery, and it's stressful because...
And you have your kids right now.
I have my kids. Mm-hmm. I don't have my first son. I lost him to the system when he was 3.5 years old.
Because of the same, what your mom went through.
Yeah, same thing. I haven't got him back. He's still in a foster home.
He's doing okay, huh?
He's doing good, though. I left him there. He's good. I love him. I like where he's at.
He loves his...
He loves his foster home.
Yeah.
Okay.
His parents.
That's
know.
Good. If he's happy, I think that's what's important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people might not understand because, yeah, you know, in people's eyes, you're supposed to raise your own kids. But at the time... I was really bad on drugs, mm-hmm. and, you know, at the time I was mad because they took him from me, but now that I'm sober and I look back, I thank God that they did take my son at the time because I don't know where he would be, and I don't know where I'd be in my life right now. Like,
see, you got alcohol and drug treatment first, and it took a while to stick.
Yeah.
Yeah? Is that fair?
Yeah, sir. Yeah, I got a lot of help. But I didn't want to help myself.
Still. I mean, it's taken, what, since age 11 all the way to...
27.
When did
well, I'm 28 now, 20, but...
Because of your kids, when were you forced to go to alcohol and drug treatment because of your kids?
When?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been in and
like,
out.
Like, well, a few
well,
times.
You were 20, right? You were 20 when you got...
Yeah, my baby was born positive to marijuana. They put me in perinatal, and
you were 20 years old then.
I was 20.
And you're 28, so 8 years. It's been a course of 8 years.
Yeah, so it's been like off and on.
When did you start to get it? What happened?
What happened? I think I started getting it like around last year. And I just got tired. I just got so tired of the chasing the high, and then I didn't want to lose my second son through the same thing. Like. I just knew what my consequences were, and I knew the life that I was leading, and I knew if I continued to use it, I knew I would lose my baby.
Is that part of recovery, part of treatment, sitting down and saying, oh, look, this is really what I'm going to lose?
You got to really hit rock bottom, basically. That's part of recovery. You just got to get tired. I got tired. I mean, you can tell people every day, all day, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, but they ain't going to do it until they... Finally realized that they wanted to.
You were
it.
Never very good at taking orders from other people.
No, I don't like authority figures. I'm not good with authority figures to this day.
So that wasn't going to work, was it?
No. All right, is that changing a little bit? Because
oh, yeah.
Even though, I mean, we all have to answer to somebody.
Well, we all do, yeah. I still do. And
I still do, you know, I do.
It's hard. It's really hard, you know. But, I mean, I have a different mentality now, you know what I mean? It's
express your powers in better ways, huh?
Yeah, like, you know, I feel good about being who I am today. Like, I go around people that 10 years ago, 8 years ago were like, you know, she's never going to change. And now they see me today and they're like, you know, unbelievable.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and go and reflect about how strong you had to be to get through what you got through?
Oh, it was, man, I mean, to come sober, you got to let go of everybody and everything. I mean, you got to let go of your whole life. You got to.
But I mean, the thing is that I see that you're very strong. You're very strong because I've seen people who have gone through some trauma, you know, just one rape, and you've gone through three, and it's very hard for them to ever overcome that.
I've gone through a lot of different
You know, just...
I just saw them.
But, you know, just, it's, you're strong.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta, you can't, I can't dwell on what happened in the past, you know what I mean? Like, if I sit back and dwell on everything, I mean,
It gets big again,
I wouldn't be here today, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Life's what you make of it, you know what I'm saying? Like, the way I look at it, life will either make you or break you, you know what I mean? And I ain't been broke yet, you know, and I got a lot of
Two little ones.
I got two boys. And, you know, and I want to be a better person.
How important for you is it that they don't go through this whole game that you went through?
Oh, it's very important because...
So they don't have to hit the street.
It's very important.
They don't have the street hitting them.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I pray that my sons don't ever go through what I've been through. And if I could do anything to change it, then I am. You know?
So there's some stuff you can do maybe to influence that, to make
a
difference?
Yeah, I mean... Most definitely, it's me. It's in my life's in my hands and my control. You know, so is theirs. You know, as long as they're young, I could teach them the right way. You know what I mean? It's like when I was 11, there was no way of changing my mentality. I was already set in my ways, just because the life that I was living with my family, my mom.
I got a question. Did the mental health treatment make a difference? I mean, you know, it had always been easy to say, you know, Misty the angry addict. Right?
Yeah.
And throw that all into the alcohol and drug pile and say, did the mental health treatment help?
Yeah. My doctor helped me.
Talk about that a little bit.
Dr. Ahmad?
Yeah. Yeah.
She gave me some segments for my anxiety, my anger. I took them, but I mismatched. Like, I use meth and I use my segments.
You'd been managing your medications, legal and not, for a long time, huh?
Yeah.
Hard to stop that.
Yeah, but... You only use one.
But did it help?
And
you
she told you, right? And she brought, and she told you. Guess what? Because Dr. Mott tells you that it.
Yeah, Dr. Mott. She worked with me a lot. Like, she gave me a lot of advice. You know what I mean? Like, just basically what I need to do to get my life right. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's meds can't do everything for me. They can only help me with certain things. You know, my way of life. And
then
the
you got to take care of it.
Yeah, I got to change my living situation, the way I'm living. You know, and then everything starts changing after that. You know, you start changing the way you live, the thing, change who you talk to, you know, and little by little, things in your life will, you know, progress and things will change.
Now you're at IVC full time.
Yes.
What's your major? What are you planning or what's your future?
Drug and alcohol counseling. I'm doing ADS. I want to be a drug and alcohol counselor. If I could just change one person, I think.
Do you get, like, A's in those classes? Because... Because you
do
know.
You like, no, well, I mean, one thing, do you like going to IVC?
Yeah, I like going to IVC. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I feel like I'm accomplishing a lot by being in school.
Yeah.
It's a different way of life.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, and that's a good attitude because a lot of, you know, I've gone through that, you know, IVC, I had to go through that. It was dreading and, go through college.
But I don't feel like that.
But I know how you felt.
All my life I've been doing the same thing. This is something totally different from from what
that's
I would usually be doing, and I feel good about it when I'm doing it.
You want it.
I want it. That's
you want it.
Yeah, I'm hungry. My mind is hungry.
It's fun.
Yeah. Cool. I want to build something for my kids. I want a foundation for my babies. I want something for my kids to be proud of me. You know what I mean? Like, I want to offer them something better in life. You know, they deserve it. They deserve a sober mom and a good living situation, you know, like stable environment and everything. You know, I've been doing this for a long time and there's nothing out there and it's the same old, and, you know. I don't know. I just want some different spark in my life. And, you know, I'm spontaneous and I don't know. I like the center of attention. And being on drugs is not the center of my attention anymore.
So right now it's school. School and your kids.
School and my kids.
Okay. And this morning you got your very own radio show.
I know.
That's right.
And it's recorded now for a very long time on the podcast.
So maybe sometime we need to come and do like another hour, because we should talk about all the skills that you use and your grounding techniques and because it's not just about showing up. It's about working pretty hard at sobriety, working pretty hard to build a life.
Oh, yeah. Sobriety is very hard because, I mean, there's days I wake up and I feel like, oh, you know, do I want to use? I mean, you do have those thoughts. You know, and somebody said no, then they'd be lying, because I do wake up and I do have those urges to want to use. But right now in my life, there is no reason for me to be high or get high. So I have everything to lose and nothing to gain by getting high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know as soon as I get high, I'm going to be right back on that same lonely road, because I'm going to feel guilty. I'm going to feel, you know what I mean? And I'm just going to have those feelings of worthlessness, and I'm going to use that as an excuse to continue
to get higher and
and then just
somewhere that car crashes into the wall
and there's just no dead end.
Well, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you, Scott.
Appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Misty. Thank you.
This is Let's Talk About It. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. Make sure and catch the podcast, share it with your friends, and join us again, of course, next week for another fun filled show.
Yes.
I'm Scott. She's Maria. Mario's on the board. That was Misty. Have a wonderful weekend.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.